to turn this on again, because it's, there is the parallel, and we are working this through, but you know.
So did you get back to that guy, and how did it play out? You must have got back to the teacher sometime later.
Well, yeah, I mean, when the New People's Army moved in, I was gone by lunchtime.
Right.
And actually, I had someone who was another volunteer. There were two of us out there, because this was 40 kilometers from any road.
Oh, yeah.
So they wanted two people, you know, in case one of us got sick, the other one could run the town,
yeah.
Which wasn't really necessary, but, you know. And, you know, he had just arrived, because I, you know, the founder of the my site had just ended his third year.
Yeah, wow.
This guy had just come.
Brand new.
And he said, I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
I've gone through my training. I've gone through this. I've just got here. I've only been here 3 days.
Yeah.
I said, Richard, you're going with me. You know, you're not going to die and get killed and be on my hands. So I really laid it out to him, and we were gone by about lunchtime.
Yeah, smart.
And then, you know, the folks up there, even though they were 40 kilometers from the town, would come into town occasionally. So I got to, you know, to talk with them and stuff like that. And eventually there was a modus vivendi that was worked out.
Yeah.
I went back up there about 3 months later.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go to some places on my own. But if I wanted to go someplace, I could tell Mr. Balintai.
And then you'd know.
And then he would send somebody with me, as long as he had about a day or two notice.
Yeah.
And then after a while, the New People's Army guys moved into the same barrio as me. I was on one side, right next door to Mr. Balintai. They were on the other.
Yeah.
I would be out in the morning, you know, pumping water for the day, you know, into the metal can to carry back to the house. They were going by on patrol, you know, with M16s and, you know, all this military hardware, and, you know, they went, hey, how are you? Fine. What are you doing? Oh, just pumping water. You know, where are you going? Oh, we're just going over there. And same thing when I'd come back. But, you know, I watched myself, and that meant that I had to keep my mouth shut as far as whoever I saw up there, because then, you know, if I didn't get hurt,
somebody
he would.
Right? Well, yeah. You obviously were a good volunteer.
Well, you know, you had to be.
Some people learn those things. Some people never can. I think the IVSs, they were very good at that. But I think there were pressures that came because of the huge American effort and the way. I don't think it was wrong to try to do things from the province. That may have been all right, and that's where the focus was. But it was just too much pressure to do too much with too little, I think. And there had never been a salesman's job to the Vietnamese. And they didn't understand why it was. And that wasn't their nature, you know. They always had to go back to Saigon, to their boss. They couldn't make a decision, you know, the whoever you were working with. Even the provincial governor had more latitude than most, but the agricultural chief, he couldn't make those decisions. He couldn't
act on independent authority.
He couldn't, no matter what the rural affairs guy
says,
he'd
been
gone. Mm-hmm. It was not their nature, you know.
If it was, they would have been gone.
They'd have been gone, right.
Yeah.
Some of them were. I remember, I think it was Mito. I can't say it right. I think that's where, I can't remember now. Viral, when I stayed in Blau, he opened the station up. I think it was Mito or Canto. And then when I went back, his replacement had good experience, but he became ineffective because he was scared to death.
Scared to death.
There was a lot of activity down there. And I'd go down. My job was to go down and check with him and
as team leader.
Leader and see what the problem was. And I always got the feeling, well, okay, he was all right now. But as soon as I left, he hardly ever left the house. It was just he was so scared and worried. He was ineffective and
If he stayed in the house, he would have been even a better target.
That's right. But I mean, things were happening all around, and he just didn't dare go out. And some people are that way. He was a good guy. If it, in different times, he would have been excellent. He worked well. Mm-hmm. He would have been the Mies. But security made him ineffective. And I think.
How much of that was him, do you think? Versus how much wisdom, maybe?
It's hard to say. I think he would have been a good. That was before. That wasn't one of the first provinces that they sent the rural affairs people. I think if he'd had an American there, right close by, he might have been all right. But he was just so worried, and you get all kinds of stories. And he, and I think Don had to get rid of him, or maybe just.
Oh, he left early. His,
yeah. But I'm surprised there wasn't more of that, because things, and maybe there were after I left, because I know things really got hot. But we used to, again, you know, when we were traveling, we were the director of agriculture, and he knew, his people would tell him. We were down once on Kong Song Prison Island, down there with him, and there was a whole group of USAID people that went down there, and he and I were going to go look at, I can't remember what it was, pepper, maybe they had pepper trees, down there. We wanted to go look at that. And somebody told him, well, you better be careful, you know, the Viet Cong are there. And he said, well, do you want to go? And I said, yeah, let's go. So we started in, and we...
This is with the Director of Agriculture?
This is with the Director of Agriculture.
Okay.
And we heard automatic fire. And we'd gone in and started to go in. And he looked at me and he said, you still want to go? And I said, no, not unless you want to. He said, no, I don't want to unless you do. We turned around and left. But it was, you know, those kind of things come with the contact, and you can't walk into a situation, the Vietnamese or whoever aren't going to tell you around, yeah, you can do, you can't do that. You have to establish that relationship. They've got to feel comfortable with you. And they, I don't think they ever had that kind of confidence in the first group of the rural affairs people that came in. Now, when some of these
RDSs
came
affairs,
in,
yeah.
right, when they came in as RD, maybe they did have that. Effectiveness, I think a lot of the best things we did was teach English.
Which you would do in addition to your normal stuff.
Some of the IBSs were very, very good technically. The horticulturalists, the Dalat station did, I think, a lot of good work. I think Harvey and Dave and some of those with the animal husbandry did a lot of good work getting people involved. But the Vietnamese were very good in the rice and the things that they did. And it was hard to better them in those kind of things. And we were not doing at that time the marketing thing and the economics of it. It was more just straight introduction and planting and harvesting the crops.
Sounds like some of it was experimentation in a sense.
Well, there was a lot of experimentation. Again, that was the backup because of USAID and the USAID felt the technicians felt they didn't feel comfortable being out in the country, not because of security, but it was hot and dirty and you know they didn't. A lot of them would carry their own water, which is no problem. But I mean, the Vietnamese were very, very friendly people and. They would invite you, they wanted you to come to the house. A lot of Orientals like that. Like I served in Thailand, and to get invited to a home was very unusual in Thailand.
In Thailand, really?
But in Vietnam, it was, you know, everybody would ask you to come to their home. And the aid people didn't feel comfortable doing that. You know, they had no idea what they were eating. So it was,
how to say please.
Or even how to say please. Now, a lot of them were kind of crude. But they were very good technicians in what they did, but a lot of them were not very people orientated. Another thing that I noticed, a lot of the USAID technicians were Southerners. And Southerners were very prejudiced. I think we're all prejudiced. It's hard for some of us to admit it, but they were pretty prejudiced. And I think that comes across very, very quick.
Yeah, doesn't take long.
The combination with the aid big picture and the money and the plan, and then the IVS are on the ground working with the locals who are going to do the work, understanding what Abe wanted, being able to work with the farm manager or station manager or whoever, I think was a very good combination. Training a lot of people, training a lot of people on the stations, working in the villages with the schools. Schools were easy introduction into the village no matter what you were doing. And I think that was something that we tried to implement, the federal government tried to implement.
Except that it got to be too much with too much aid.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, you got the money and the people, and you gotta show results, whatever you think results are.
Yeah, whether they're good or not.
And whether they're good or not. Yeah.
One thing I was looking at when I noticed the timing of your second tour, you were there during the end of the Diem regime.
Yeah.
That was How did that?
Really sad. That was really sad. Oh, that's.
How did you see that?
Well,
how did it affect you?
I was,
well, first of all, personally, but also work.
You know? I was really ugly about it. You know, when I was stupid, another one of those stupid letters. After I finished up my first tour, I came back home and was teaching, or maybe I was going to the university or whatever, but I wrote a letter known as him, the president, and told him, you know, I'd been there, and I thought that what his plan for his country was very good. And I'd worked with his provincial people, and I thought they were sincere and were doing a good job. I thought it was great. In fact, the house and the lot, the IBS house, the house right next to it, behind it, was Madame New's house.
Mm-hmm.
And she came up when IBS, when I was there, would always have Christmas in the lot. And she came up one Christmas, and I had tea or something, and everybody said hello to Madame New. But I got a letter back.
You mean she came to your house, or you went to her house?
No, she came up to the IBS house.
The IBS
we were all
house.
There,
okay.
And she said hello. And she was really kind of a stylish lady. So I got a letter back from, not Zim, but the administrative assistant, and said, oh, thank you, and nice to hear, and all that. And again, you know, we were pretty pretty naive. There was a lot of graft, but that was their system, too. I mean, whether you accept that or not, that was a way of life. And they were pretty hard on Zim, because he got killed, and I thought that was pretty tasteless, and I don't know what they could have done different, but I don't think what happened was very good either. It was a tough situation, but lost a lot of respect, and I suppose the Americans did too. But
how so?
Well, I mean, that isn't how the Vietnamese take care of problems. You know, they don't go out and kill somebody. And whether you know, the Americans didn't do it, but they certainly involved in it. And then you get the question, you know, well, if they'll do it to him, why wouldn't they do it to me? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the rural affairs, you know, some of those things were happening. So I don't think we ever grew closer. I think the relationship, the working relationship between the Americans and the Vietnamese just it became more difficult. Nice on the surface, but whether they were ever very effective, I don't think.
And the Diem assassination was a part of this
separation.
Definitely.
Very
definitely.
I think it was, yeah.
Not just...
That was the point, that's a place that I could pick. Now, there were probably a lot of instances before that others...
Right.
But I think that was one of the major turning points.
One of the watersheds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you would have observed that, because he was assassinated in November.
Yeah.
And you only would have been around for another 6 months, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah.
And in that amount of time, did you see this relationship already taking a nosedive?
Well, I think the relationship then was that the contact between the rural affairs people, the eight people out of the province, and IBS technician, or whatever they were, I think that became stronger for whatever reason. And then the contacts and the relationship with the provincial people, the Vietnamese,
Yeah.
Became less and less and less.
Ah, so it became a bifurcated, you know, yeah, with the Americans on one side.
It was a social thing, you know,
yeah.
Hi, it's good to see you.
Yeah, yeah.
You never sit down and talk to them, you know, what are we going to do today or next week or what is the project? They knew that you had your project, go ahead and do it.
I think. Yeah, no,
but it would
no,
be good to talk to some of the others.
You were there to observe.
Well, but there were others that followed me that took those positions. IBS is a
sure.
And those are the guys you should talk to. They served, you know, as a volunteer, and then they went and served in aid and were rural development people.
Well, and we are.
Yeah,
and we are talking to them. But, you know, there's also let me ask it. In this splitting of Vietnamese and Americans,
yeah.
Were the AID along people at the time still the first generation of AID? The ones that had not been IVS volunteers?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe later, this is now speculation. You already said yes, but you know, speculation for the future. Maybe when the IVSers took over, maybe some of that older relationship.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
Okay.
But it was, you know, it was spotted, and there'd be.
And it would depend on the IVSer presence or
right.
former Peace Corps
yes.
presence,
yeah.
something
yeah,
like
Corps,
that.
That's right. Yes.
Rather than
the program. Yeah.
And but overall, the program was weakened because of this.
It was. I think it was. See.
Yeah.
There were two aid people. We had the you say technical people, the horticulturists and
right.
agronomists and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
They still were there. And mm-hmm. then you had the rural affairs people, the provincial people.
Right.
They were in charge of the program in the province, the mm-hmm. U.S. program, whatever the program was. The USAID technician were part of their assets. And they could say, you know, you got to have 100 rubber trees or something. And I mm-hmm. guess they had to support the mission. And then... IBS is sort of in between there.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least we thought we were in between. We didn't really see ourselves taking orders from the rural affairs people. That wasn't our job.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, the guy in the field has to get along with everybody. So they'd kind of work out their own relation. And then we'd go, sometimes they'd call me and they'd say, hey, you know, Don, Bob McNaffier isn't working with me. What can we do? He's, you know, he didn't pay any attention to me. So Bob Plummer grew up and talked to Bob McNaff. And McNaff, you know what the Vietnamese plan was or
mm-hmm.
what their projects were. So it was easier to smooth those out in the beginning
mm-hmm.
than in the end. I think when I left, after I left, it must have been a nightmare, because I think the rural affairs people had more power. It was probably the nature of those people, too. You know, they just took power.
There's
right. always a takeover type guy, and I think they gravitated to those
mm-hmm,
jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But whether they were effective
is another thing.
I don't think so.
So what about the Vietnamese? I mean, you said that they would have, while the AID rural development folks come in,
yeah.
rural affairs, I'm
right,
sorry,
affairs.
I got to get the terminology
I can't
right.
remember. It's, yeah,
okay.
It was,
well, we'll agree on that.
Yeah.
and sort of take over some of the IVS folks. Did the Vietnamese make a distinction between IVS and these
oh,
other
yeah.
AID
oh,
types?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
So they didn't lump you all as...
Well, maybe later they did. I don't know.
Okay.
See,
well,
I was saying
talking about
rural
your
affairs
area.
People were just coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And his counterpart would be the provincial governor.
Okay.
The rural affairs. That would be his counterpart. And now the provincial governor can tell the chief of agriculture, the station chief, what he wants in his province. And, you know, he'd get some of it. But that guy would always have to go to Saigon,
right.
to the minister, and say,
mm-hmm.
Can we do this, or am I supposed to do this? And the rural affairs people never understood that. And they could tell the governor what they wanted, and he couldn't understand why the governor couldn't get what. You know, the government, Vietnamese don't tell you no. Oh, you can't do that. No.
No.
Say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't get it. And it'd make them ugly. And then they go to the IVS. And then the pressure's on IVS to go to the guy that the governor's already perhaps talked to.
Yeah.
You don't even know that the governor told him he had to do it. But very tough situation for IBS. I think because IBSs were there, it lasted longer maybe than it would have otherwise.
Yeah.
I think the relationship was strained. It had to be hard on everybody. It had to be hard on the IBS. It certainly had to be hard on their counterparts.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're being pushed from every direction. Here comes a new American. He hasn't been introduced to anybody. They don't know him. They just know he's got a position. His counterpart is supposed to be the governor. And some of them were good. Some of them were effective.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I know. You're making.
But it kept getting worse and worse and worse. And those guys were under a lot of pressure, and they had money, and they had people and personnel, they had to place. And it was a good time to leave in '64. It was too bad. I really enjoyed Vietnam. I enjoyed the people I worked with. I think the IBS team was an awesome group of people. All kinds of personalities, but worked very well as a team, and with very, very few exceptions. Worked well with the Vietnamese, glad to be there. I think they, recognized they weren't going to save the world, but were doing some good work, and perhaps some of the best work they were doing was just people work, not necessarily building an airstrip or putting in a road or even a well, but being there and being concerned and interested.
Have you thought about going back?
Well, I spent a lot of time afterwards, after I left IBS.
That's right.
Went down to Peru. Mm-hmm. That was quite different. Enjoyed it, but I think now that I think about it, I think that the position I was in then was more typical of the rural affairs guy. We were put there. We had to work with these people. We expected them. I was with contract with aid. We were expecting them to do whatever it is we thought was important, and the.
In South America.
The Peruvians were, it was a tough situation. The Thai experience was very similar to the Vietnamese. Very, very well educated, qualified, serious people. Most of those that I worked with were interested, I think, in helping their villages or wherever. I'm not sure that was the case in Peru. But the people we were working with in Peru, that was a crazy situation. They had been metropolitan police, traffic police, and then they were sent way down in the jungle, and they weren't comfortable. They didn't understand what it was they were supposed to do, and didn't do a very good job at it.
Yeah.
But the Thais were a lot like the Vietnamese. My first 2 years with the Vietnamese, very understanding. They were the provincial people. Most of the Thais spoke English. Most all of the Vietnamese, all of the ones that we came in contact spoke French, and many of them were speaking English. I think I like the British system better than the French. I think the English education people had more cadre. The French would have the top dog and not many people under it. So I think it was easier in Thailand to work with.
Because they modeled their education on the British.
Yeah, more like the British.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or as I understand it, the French, there would always be a very well-educated person, but many of the people under them were not. And maybe it was the way it was explained.
No, you put it quite well here when you said in your sheet here, I believe that the Vietnamese and the Thai, third assignment, wanted change and were open to U.S. agriculture, education, and public health approaches.
Yeah.
And that you were contrasting your two Southeast Asian experiences with the South America.
Yeah. It was a great time.
Yeah. I'm going to see what questions I had. See, you've gone through almost an hour and a half.
That's great. Well, you said that's about normal. That's good.
That's about normal.
I'm glad I made normal.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 98.6.
Yeah, pretty good. Let's see what we missed here.
Well, no. See, I had first clarified dates of the 59, 61, yeah. and 62, 64.
Yeah.
Why the difference in friendliness between the two assignments? You know, because you did talk about that. I'm not sure if you really answered that question. Or if you explained it to me.
I think it's a cultural thing. I think the...
I wasn't meaning the South America thing.
Yeah.
I meant within Vietnam.
Oh.
Because you said in the first place that you were assigned.
Oh.
They were very, very friendly. And then after that, the other assignments that you had in Vietnam were not quite as...
Oh, no, I didn't mean that. I explained it wrong.
Oh, okay.
No, read it to me. What did I say?
Well, let me say here. Read it yourself. First term
work as an agriculture extent, introducing cow plants to hill-trodden Vietnamese, language training at Ag College Ba Lo, can open new station Hue, working with the Bo Ag School. Second term, return as agriculture team leader for Delta and Coastal Lowland Province, but I didn't mean to say that the relation. I think
we said all the above. First term more friendly and work related. Second term was close, friendly, etc. First work was just
station managers and school directors.
Traveled off. Maybe I was wondering if it was because of the job as a team leader that removed you a little bit from the close relationships.
A little bit, except that the IVS had that close relationship at the station. And then what I did is came with the people from Saigon. I think we married those people. I think Mr. Chun was that type of person anyways. But I think that was a good combination. Because when we were there, when I was there first term, the relationship was generally just with the station manager and then with the USAID people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So the second term, Mike and I were out there. Mike would travel with...
Mike who?
Mike Chilton.
Okay.
You know, when he traveled, he'd travel with the people from Saigon, from the ministry, or from the university. He traveled with a lot of university professors, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we were doing... Not what we were doing, but what happened is we got many of the people in Saigon out into the provinces talking to the people, their people.
Who they wouldn't have normally?
They wouldn't normally, right, because usually the people came in and talked to them.
Uh-huh.
And they could see the projects. And I think that was a good beginning, but I think the rural affairs thing came in towards the end of that, and I think the... stopped it.
Yeah.
Slowed it down, and I think things changed dramatically.
Just died out,
No, I didn't mean to say the second. No, I love the second term.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the impression that I had, and I thought maybe because you were a team leader that you were no longer in a village and no longer interacting.
I missed that, but we traveled all the time, and I think what we did was. Because the IBS of team leader,
mm-hmm.
Mike and Bob were going out, and we were going with it wasn't our counterpart, it would be the USAID counterpart. I think they were embarrassed, the technicians. And so then they would go with us. So we'd have, we'd have the Bob Bartletts, the horticulturists, so somebody, and the director of agriculture and the IBSer, and sometimes the home ec people would go mm-hmm. to the province,
mm-hmm.
Usually meet with our people first and then go to the provincial governor. You have the formalities, the Vietnamese and the French are big on that, and then you get down to work. But it was everybody
mm-hmm.
Working together as a group. We'd split off eventually. You were with the IBSs and they'd split off with their station managers, but I think we understood pretty much where everybody was coming from, what we could do, what we couldn't do. They would always ask for more money. We didn't have any money. IBS didn't have any money at all.
Yeah.
And then when rural affairs people got in there, they'd ask for money, and rural affairs had it.
Yeah.
And that's how they got in. And
mm-hmm.
the Vietnamese had all kinds of things they wanted, and rural affairs had the money and did maybe the first two or three projects. And then they started to set their own agenda.
Yeah, and then that, yeah.
Yeah.
And we both know what happens then. Yeah. Okay, well, that clarifies what I had, the way that I had read your statement, which you knew what you were saying, but I didn't. And then I asked to myself, how did the increased war situation impact on the volunteers who were under you while you were a team leader?
It was just beginning.
Yeah.
It was just beginning, like the guy in Mito. Mm-hmm. It restricted their area of work, their influence sometimes, their schedules, but it was just beginning. The IVSs were still very, very mobile, mm-hmm. and making contacts with all of the village headmen and all that they had before, but, mm-hmm. but towards the end of 64, the mid-part of 64, I think, and the Tonkin Gulf incidents, it really started to close down. And those that came after me, the IBSs, I think that they'd have quite a different perspective.
Yeah.
Some of them, I think, were pretty much restricted to the towns that they were in.
In some, you know, this is speculation on my part, but, and there's tape here for my speculation. I don't think that's why education became important, but it's certainly why education could make up an increasing number of IVSers, because generally the education folks were in cities where security might have been better.
Yeah.
Whereas the Aggies and rural development,
there was a big demand for the education people.
Well, there's a big demand anyway, but I mean, they're also secure.
And they're insecure, right? More secure, that's right.
Yeah.
But you know, we didn't have any problem with security while I was there until the rural affairs people got in.
Yeah,
and the program changed, and U.S. government program changed, and then there was the money and the influence and the people running around, and then pretty soon the helicopters and the supplies. And, it was hard to keep track of.
And then it becomes a circus.
It was a circus.
Yeah.
And much more so than after I left. And I was there at a very good time. And
mm-hmm.
Both.
Fourth side.
You know, I did see some of the, one of his brothers, the archbishop, and another one there, his advisor, and I saw the place that they'd ransacked in Hue, the house that he had. Beautiful, beautiful place. And
who ransacked what house?
The public, or maybe it was the army, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Zim's...
after the assassination. Yeah. Oh, okay.
And we went up and looked at the place. It was just gorgeous.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had, I don't know whether Zim had the problem or his family had the problem. They all had the problem. But, that's not a whole lot different than what happens in this country. We've got some pretty bad problems here with people in government.
Of course, I haven't had... cool yet.
No, I don't know. I don't know what we could have done, should have done. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I thought it was terribly, terribly, terribly wrong. But I didn't have a solution. I don't have a solution.
Right.
I don't know what should have been done. But I think the Americans took a hit on that one. And again, just because he had done an awful lot for his country, and identified with the Americans, and then we were the ones that cut him loose, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll do it to him, why won't you do it to anybody?
That's right.
And I would think it's a lot harder for all the Americans to work with him, even if they may or may not have been in agreement with Zim at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, that's a hard one.
Yeah, it is.
But, I remember the crew. We were out there where the tanks were going by, not the Tunsen yet, blockade, and then when the Buddhists were burning themselves. That was not pleasant. But it was country in transition, and maybe those are the pains they had to go through. I don't know. I don't know how it could have been done any different.
You saw the tanks, you said. That was during the coup, the actual coup.
Yeah.
Where were you then?
You know, where the airport, the Saigon airport, Tosin Yat, well, the team house was right just
along. Oh, that's right. Yeah, it was right next to it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were in town and saw the planes diving in.
Uh-huh.
Went up on the water tank,
Fallujah,
because a lot of activity at the airport. But
Did you see any of the Buddhist burnings?
I didn't see them myself,
uh-huh.
No. But shortly afterwards, of course, in the papers and all kinds of horrible. No, I didn't see that. Yeah. I didn't see anything. I'm glad I didn't.
It's kind of disgusting. You know. But what about the student marches and such? Did you see them or get to talk to any students or the Buddhist protesters to find out what they were?
Not very much. I think Don did.
Mm-hmm, yes. Yeah.
Because he was. I think he was teaching at the university there, and he had a lot of contacts with the students, contacts with many students. A lot of them would come by the team house. But it seems to me he was branching out in other fields. I was pretty busy.
As team leader,
travel. At least I thought I was with the team out in the field,
right,
trying to tell them what was going on, what they should look for, what they need to be careful about, and you know, pull back and take things easy a little bit and see how things play out.
What would you tell them for in a general sense of what to be careful of?
Well, you know, right after that, don't be too aggressive. Find out what the lay of the land is with you and your counterparts.
Right.
We don't know where they stood on this whole thing or where they stand now.
Right.
You know, if you possibly can, pull back from the rural affairs people. Keep it friendly, but I wouldn't, don't travel around with them, be their mouthpiece, the interpreter. I pull back and stay away, see how things break out and who your friends are, who comes to you. Let them come to you if you possibly can. See who feels comfortable making contact with you, and then keep developing the relationship if you can. Mm-hmm. But, those guys, some of them, and they tried to, but the rural affairs people, they were under a lot of pressure, even more then, I suppose, than ever before.
Yeah, to make sure that the coup showed that it was a success.
Oh, it was going to be a success, and everything was going to fall in place.
That General Khan or General Min or whoever the first one was going to, take over and run it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you work with the village, with the headman of the village? Who would, how would?
Well, I would, when we were there. I wouldn't do that.
No, but it's more of your first term.
Oh, my first term. Well, we would go, if somebody from the station, if I was working at the station, generally they didn't because he had to stay at the station. But if he'd go, that would be ideal. If he didn't go, then we'd go with the interpreter, the IBS interpreter or the driver, and then we'd go to the provincial office, tell them where we're going to be, who we're going to meet, what we're going to do. Sometimes the word would get down to the village headman that somebody's coming, and when we go to the village, we'd go to him first.
That was all the school. First stop.
Usually the village, but sometimes it hit the school coming in, so it could either be the school or the village man, but usually the village man, sit down and have tea and tell him what you're going to do. And
you're smiling from ear to ear right now.
I was thinking they always wanted you to be a part of the official whatever it is they were doing, and they'd always want you to speak, and they didn't care you couldn't speak in Vietnamese. You could stand up there and say something in English. That was crazy, and that's when you really felt inadequate, you'd like to be able to say something reasonable in Vietnamese, but they always treated you with great dignity and respect. And then we'd do whatever it was we were going to do, or he would. Quite often, the plan would change then, because he would have somebody that he'd want you to go to if you were introducing cacao.
Okay.
He usually had a contact, not always, but he'd have somebody you should go see. And so you did. And then when we left, when we were done, we'd try to go back and tell him that,
We did this, we did that, we saw so and so.
We're leaving now, and we'll be back in a week or a month to see how things are going. And, and most of the time, 90% of the time, they were, I think they were appreciated we were there and tried to be helpful. Once in a while, you'd get one that was not interested at all. Maybe he had other priorities, but unless they said no, which I don't think they would, you know, we'd just get out of his hair and go to where we intended to go, unless we'd been told we hadn't. And sometimes on those, we'd go back and leave word with somebody else, at least tell the elder or whatever that, here and leaving at whatever time and appreciate his hospitality and all that. But 90% of the time or better, they were, you know, they were very forthcoming and helpful and seemingly helpful.
Seemingly helpful. Oh, especially if you might be helping some of their own people.
Yeah. Well, you see, but that, again, even that was hard because we were coming in and I was coming in, it was extension, and it was with crops, cacao. Chocolate. What did they want chocolate for? The base in the in that area was rubber, and they had said, "Well, won't, you know, why don't you give us rubber trees? You know, why don't you make that rubber, sell it to the French and all that." So those situations were, you know, hard to explain. You didn't know yourself always what they were asking. You had to be careful. An interpreter could really make you or break you. And you know, you've seen the classic thing, you know, that. Interpreter's talking to the head man, they talk. Then he tells you, he says, well, he's glad you're here, you know. And so if you weren't able to follow, I really couldn't. When they were talking Vietnamese to English, I couldn't. You know, I could tell some of the subjects, but I had no idea what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So the Vietnamese interpreter could make or break a program. And I don't remember... how all of the first interpreters that IBS had came, but they were excellent. They were very, very good. And I think they were pro-American, and they were pro-American without being anti-Vietnamese. And I think they were our strongest asset. I really do.
And you know some of them here in the United States?
Yeah, Chi, you gotta see Chi and... in DC area. Dang was another one. Dang was down in Georgia. The IBS office should be able to put you in touch with some of those. You certainly should talk to those. Ding. I think it was Mr. Ding who was the animal husbandry guy at Hue College. And he had been to the States. I can't remember where he got training. And he was the one that asked for IBS up there. Ding. I'm pretty sure it was Ding.
And he's here now.
I don't know. No, I don't know where he is now.
Okay.
I bet Don Luce can tell you.
Okay.
If he's in the States. No, Dang was an IBS interpreter that I knew that came to...
D-A-N-G.
Yeah, and he was with me in Hung Lock, and then they took him into Saigon, into the office. And I know he came to the States. We corresponded for a while. I think he was in Georgia.
What was the full name?
Yeah, I can't remember. Okay. Wind and Dang, probably.
Hmm. Yeah.
I imagine.
I think very likely. Yeah. But he lived in Georgia?
Yeah, he got to Georgia somehow. I don't know if he came with a Christian group or what it was.
Okay. Because we do have somebody in Georgia, but he was not Vietnamese, he's Lao. Oh. And he was the bookkeeper for IVS Laos for about 6 years. Yeah. Financial officer.
Dang was a bookkeeper for IBS.
In Vietnam. Really? Oh, wow.
He was an interpreter first, and he was at Hong Kong. And then I wanted to take him to Hue. I wanted him to go to Hue with me when I went there. But he had a chance to go to Saigon, and he wanted to go there. His family was there. And he was, I'm sure he was the bookkeeper for the Vietnamese.
Okay, because we had just... We had just gotten his form just shortly before...
It was Laos, huh?
Yeah, this one guy's in Laos, and he's in a neighboring suburb right next to Mark. Oh, so Mark will be seeing him.
I got another one. let's see, how did this go? Burr Phuchi was in Thailand. And I think he was in Chiang Mai. Mm-hmm. And then Sue and I went out and went to Chiang Mai. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember where Burr went then. I think he...
A lot of people go there.
He left. Oh, he may have been... I don't know. He may have gone to Vietnam as a world. But anyway, he got a Lao boy who was a very good student, I guess. And he, mm-hmm. and he made arrangements. So he came into Chiang Mai and got schooling. Uh-huh. And while he was there, and he'd visit with Sue and I. And then I think he ended up with Burr in Idaho, and his family, you know, when I was
going really?
Down.
Oh, really? Uh-huh.
And we corresponded a little while.
Well, wasn't he already in Thailand?
Well, he was in Laos, and he came to Thailand. Burr made the arrangement, so he came to Thailand and went to
for
school.
For study, yeah.
For study. And then, I guess he got to the States.
After the fall of Laos?
Maybe before. And okay. then... He was living with Burr,
uh-huh.
and I don't know what I, you know, we were corresponding at Christmas time. He had a family. He sent pictures of his kids. And
oh, neat. Uh-huh.
But a lot of IBSs did that, uh-huh. I think. IBS, you know, was more one-on-one rather than the whole countryside, like the...
The grand say, plans.
Yeah. And some of them were very, very effective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. I've sort of run out of questions.
I've run out of time. Here. It's good, you know, I think if you came back a second time, maybe we'd be more, I'd be more focused and, you know, really not spent much time and thought
oh,
about
I
it
don't
before,
know.
But I think
I don't
now,
know, you've pulled quite a,
you know,
a few things together.
Touched the imagination and probably would do... a little better, but I really hope you get a chance to talk to some of those guys that followed us and what their perception was. I think they had it. Really
yeah, we
tough.
Talked to
John Sumner. You talked to John, right?
Sure did.
In
Rattleboro.
Vermont, right. Yeah. Now he came. He was there with me, but he was there afterwards.
Right.
He must have been one of these that had that experience with rural affairs people. I wonder what his perception was. And he was one of the early ones. Now, I can't remember if he stayed a couple tours or not. He may have.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he did. He was, he did. I don't know if he was 4 years.
I bet he was, yeah.
But I've got the list here. We can actually check his years.
He was a very bright guy. He was education, I think, right? I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
63 to 67.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was two tours.
Yeah,
I was wondering if it might have been broken up a little bit, but anyway, no, I was going to say that we're halfway through this fourth side, so Bob, I'd like to thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you came up. Well, very interesting talk to you. You're a very interesting guy. I think you've had a really fun life.
Well, thank you, but I think you've had a pretty good one yourself. I mean. It's almost too bad we couldn't, you know, talk a little bit about the Thai experience and then the Peruvian experience.
But they were so similar. They were so similar, and the base was Vietnam.
Yeah, but not the Peruvian.
That was a little different.
Yeah. So you know, we'll leave this, and maybe if we think of something else in the morning, we can add to it. But otherwise,
sure. No,
thank you so much.
Well, thank you.